most busted in Laredo, but for reasons that I'd rather not disclose.
I smoke pot, and I like it a lot. Hi, this is Willie Nelson. I learned a long time ago that marijuana is a lot safer to use than alcohol. There's absolutely nothing wrong with the responsible use of marijuana by adults. It's time we stopped arresting and started respecting responsible marijuana smokers in America. And to learn what you can do to help, please contact Normal at www.norml.org or call toll-free at 888-67-NORMAL.
The show was long and we were just sitting there, and we'd come to play and not just for the ride.
Distributed by the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws in Washington, D.C. This is your daily audio stash, the growing truth about cannabis. Welcome to the most popular audio podcast regarding marijuana in all of America and all the world, featuring interviews with scientists, politicians, doctors, prohibition policy activists, regular cannabis consumers, musicians, and Normal staff and Normal's board of directors, along with music and comedy no other podcast can offer. You can always find out more about the show at our website, normalaudiostash.com. We're ending marijuana prohibition with education, one listener at a time. Welcome back to Normal's Daily Audio Stash. Today it is Tuesday, September 4th. I'm your host, Chris Goldstein. Take a moment to join us at Normal to help end marijuana prohibition in America. We can do it. Just visit norml.org to make your donation or join Normal today. Hope everyone had an awesome Labor Day weekend this weekend, relaxing, getting back into the fall schedule. Thanks to everyone who sent in emails of appreciation about that Cottonmouth Kings interview on Friday that ran this weekend, along with those two exclusive tracks from the Cottonmouth Kings' new album, Cloud Nine. Again, more information about the album available at SuburbanNoiseRecords.com. Thanks again for all those emails this weekend. Today on the program, another great show. We're going to speak with Normal's founder and legal counsel, Keith Strupp, in a special Government at Work segment. Also on the program today, we're going to have some music and some speakers from Seattle's HempFest. Just getting through editing all of that audio from Seattle's HempFest. A big thanks to Tim Pate and Sky High Productions up there in Oregon for helping supply some of the media there from Seattle's HempFest this year. We're going to have some of those speakers and panels along with music from Tim Pate today. And later on in the week, we're hoping to have that Rick Steves audio online for you as well. So HempFest audio this week. We'll also speak with Tim Pate again on Thursday in a special interview with Tim. He's the organizer of Portland, Oregon's HempStock. That's happening this weekend. Lots of events coming up. This weekend is HempStock in Portland. Next weekend is the Boston Freedom Rally on the Boston Common in Massachusetts. More information about those events are available on our website at normalaudiostash.com. Let's get right into today's stash with our Government at Work segment. Government at Work, Keith Strupp, the founder of Normal and current legal counsel for the National Foundation, joins us here today. Keith, welcome back to the program.
Thank you, Chris. Always nice to be with you.
Great to speak with you today, Keith. In the official weekly press release last week from Normal, you had some interesting things to say about the resignation of Attorney General Alberto Gonzalez and what the next appointed Attorney General could bring to the equation here of medical marijuana. First, what could a change in the Attorney General mean for marijuana reform?
Well, you know, I think it's tempting for all of us when someone like the Attorney General finally has to give in and step down. The tendency is just to sort of celebrate, to feel like, gee, we won a small victory. We got this guy out of office, and he clearly was unqualified and never should have been there in the first place. And from our perspective, he was particularly bad because the federal government not only continued to act as if marijuana has no medical use under this administration, but in particular, his DEA and Department of Justice. Remember, the Drug Enforcement Administration is a subset of the Department of Justice, so it's under the Attorney General. They continued to arrest and prosecute medical patients and people who provide for them in the state of California in particular, but in some other legal marijuana states as well. In fact, just today there was a news story out about three new collectives being raided in San Mateo, and just a few days ago you had on the interview by Addison Dinmore, whose place was closed in Oakdale. It's as if this Attorney General didn't understand there are things more important to the Department of Justice, for example, terrorism, than worrying about a few seriously ill patients and their care providers in the state of California. So, yes, I'm delighted that the Attorney General's been forced out of office, but I mostly want to point out that this may present an opportunity. If President Bush would take advantage of this, it would give him a chance to institute a new policy for his administration. When you've got a situation where 80% of the American public support the medical use of marijuana, and it's been that way now for 3 or 4 years in this country, you are truly out of step with the mainstream America if you're continuing to treat seriously ill patients who use marijuana in these states as if they are criminal. And that's what this administration and the Attorney General has been doing.
Some of the names floated out there for this new Attorney General include Michael Chertoff, the current head of the Department of Homeland Security, and then Asa Hutchinson, a former Drug Enforcement Administration director. They won't bring much of a change if appointed here. Might there be some better choices, though?
Well, I mean, I think anyone other than Asa Hutchinson, frankly, when Asa ran the DEA, he certainly was no moderate at all. He was a reasonably moderate member of Congress when he was there, but when he was running the DEA, he was all gung-ho, and the more people he could arrest and throw in jail, the better, the more drug offenders. So I don't hold out much hope that we'd see a change in policy under Asa. Under Chernoff, it's unlikely simply because there's only, you know, 18 months left or so in this administration, and the odds are that the Bush administration is going to continue right on through the balance of their administration with this ignorant policy of ignoring the medical potential of marijuana. But maybe not. And Michael Chernoff does seem like he's a strong enough individual that if he took a look at this and decided the administration was wrong, I don't think it's impossible that he would argue for a change in policy. As I say, it's a long shot. I think probably we're going to have to wait for a new administration, but at least it does give an opportunity with the appointment of a new Attorney General that the Bush administration might decide they've got plenty of other battles to fight. They don't need to be prosecuting seriously ill patients.
And in a letter Governor Bill Richardson wrote to President Bush about 2 weeks ago, he was very passionate about how the president could have some compassion here at the end of his administration and stop those federal raids on medical marijuana facilities and patients. But it's these appointees and the president himself who really have the power in this situation. If the DEA and the Justice Department respected states' rights and took a different view here, there wouldn't be any federal medical marijuana raids at all.
No, that's true. I mean, it really would only take the change of in the position of the president, or even for the president simply to relax a little and accept the good advice of an attorney general who would tell him this didn't make any sense, and it would all change. And by the way, none of that's impossible. I mean, if people remember far enough back to former President Richard Nixon, he ended up going to China, and he was the great commie hater. You know, no one ever thought that was going to happen. And remember, after many years, we finally got an end to the Vietnam War, and God knows one of these days we might even get an end to the Iraqi War. So even though it's been a long, long, hard struggle to try to get the federal government to deal honestly about medical marijuana, that does not mean that it's impossible. And indeed, based on what we've seen from the Democratic candidates so far, I think all 8 or 9 of the major candidates have endorsed the medical use of marijuana. Should the Democrats win, in the next presidential election, I think you will see a total change in policy, and I think the federal government will stand back and let the states adopt whatever medical marijuana policy they feel comfortable with.
Now, we've seen state attorney generals like Bill Lockyer out in California. He very well defended the medical marijuana access laws over the years. So, you know, we see people on a state level who do well understand these laws and protect patients' access to medical marijuana.
In fact, as you mentioned, the longtime attorney general there in California back when Prop 215 was passed was a major player in helping get that passed. He actually published a memorandum of law when the question came up, is it legal for the state of California to legalize medical use when it's still illegal under federal law? And then Attorney General Lockyer issued a legal opinion saying, yes, it absolutely is. And indeed, a few years later, when that issue made it to the Supreme Court, the Supreme Court agreed with them. You can remove penalties, even though the federal government may maintain penalties, and that does not create a direct conflict between the state and federal law. They're both valid, and that's what Attorney General Lockyer said at the time, and it's still good law today.
There's also a few states' writers on the presidential campaign, Democrat Dennis Kucinich and Republican Ron Paul, really the most notable. Should either of those candidates make serious headway in the presidential election season, that alone could have some impact on the federal government protecting states' rights here?
Well, I think it certainly can, and in particular, you can imagine as we get closer and closer to the nominating process, these candidates that are good on the medical use of marijuana, without question, are going to make that an issue. And so I think, yes, I think we will benefit overall. Those of us who favor the medical use of marijuana are going to benefit from the fact that it's probably going to be a fairly major issue during the run-up to the nomination. Now, as to Dennis in particular, but also Ron Paul, they are both people who believe in personal freedom very strongly. I know both of them individually. I've spoken to them about marijuana policy many times, and I can tell you that not only would they support the medical use of marijuana, but both of those candidates believe the federal government should get out of the business of marijuana enforcement, and they would encourage states to decriminalize the use of marijuana by adults. So, again, it could make an enormous difference if these guys should end up with a nomination, but even if they don't end up with a nomination, they may impact the debate leading up to the nomination, and it may mean that we get some national attention on the question of why are we still arresting marijuana smokers, period. It doesn't matter why they use it, whether they use it religiously or for medical purposes or just for personal pleasure, it should be none of the government's business, and we have at least two major candidates, Kucinich and Paul, who agree with us on that.
Right on, Keith. Well, this has been a wonderful conversation here today. I really appreciate you taking time to join us here on the Audio Stash, Keith.
Always nice to be with you, Chris. Thank you.
Thank you again. Keith Strupp is the founder of Normal, and he remains legal counsel for the National Foundation. He can be reached online at keith@normal.org. Stay tuned. We've got audio from Seattle's HempFest coming up next. Now it's time to get into some of our Seattle Hemp Fest audio from Seattle's Hemp Fest in 2007. Rick Steves was out on stage this year along with a number of notable Normal representatives. There are five stages there, including the Hemposium tent, which has panels of speakers throughout the day. We're going to hear some music today from the opening act at Seattle's Hemp Fest, and this gentleman opens Seattle's Hemp Fest year after year. Musician Tim Pate will also join us here in an interview Thursday. He's the organizer of Portland's Hemp Stock. But here's Tim Pate opening Seattle's Hemp Fest 2007.
I want to invite you all to come down to Hemp Stock down in Portland. We're going to have that on September the 8th and the 9th. Down at Riverview Park. It's down by Elks Park. We had issues with our city as well, and we were denied a permit, and we asked the ACLU to step in and help us, and they did, and the city relinquished here last week, and we are now towards getting our permit and having an event. So really excited about that. I want to invite you all down for that, too. Are you ready for me back there?
Hang on.
All right, I'm hanging on. be patient, because this is going to be the liveliest, most incredible stage you've ever seen all weekend long. It is every year. I'm amazed at the level of talent they pull out each year just to have on the stage. It's a wonderful place to be. And, you know, quite frankly, he doesn't get enough love. We all love him anyway, but if you would, please give it up for Vivian McPeak, the one person in the world, I swear to you, has helped me more in my musical career than any other individual in the world. A dear friend.
What you got?
Ah, I think we're closing in on music. Friend who passed away this last year, whose picture is right behind us. Thank you.
Thank you, Tim Pate. Let's hear it for Tim Pate. You know, people that eat tofu want to call him Tim Pate, but he's not tofu-ing, so we're not going to do that. And I'm really sorry. I hope you don't have a tempeh tantrum about that, Tim. Left a waffle taste in my mouth.
Just think about it.
Okay, you know, the sun's coming out. You know, that's more like it. I think Sharon, James, and Robert, and all of our brothers and sisters that are now core members up in the sky are going to do a favor for us this weekend, man, and keep moving those clouds out of the way. And it really doesn't matter, because we'll stay here anyway, because we're going to do whatever it takes. Sunil Agarwal is a medical student at the University of Washington, Seattle, where he's also getting a PhD in medical geography. I think he's got his PhD in THC already. His research is focused on the political ecology of medical marijuana germplasm access and delivery. Sunil holds a BS in chemistry, a BA in philosophy, and a minor in religious studies from UC Berkeley. He's a two-bred Okie from Muskogee. Give it up to my brother man, Sunil.
Hello, Seattle Hemp Fest. How y'all doing out there? Yeah, give me some hemp. Hemp love. Oh, yeah. So good to be out here. This is the tallest hemp stage in the world. This is the place where human relationship with the cannabis plant is proud and festive. Right? We're all here. What are we missing? We're here festive. We're missing the hemp. Right? This is the hemp fest. Where is the hemp?
Come on!
Whenever you see hemp, whenever you see cannabis flowers, you got to remember that it all came from a seed, a little bit of germplasm, plant genetic resources that are evolved on planet Earth just like you and I. We are all cousins. Us and the plants, we and cannabis, we're distant relatives. Many hundreds of millions of years ago, we diverged. So where is the hemp at? Where is the germplasm? Where is the seeds? They've been taken over by a bunch of world governments 50 years ago. They decided to take monopoly ownership over this naturally occurring plant genetic resource, saying that only they can legally own it, and anybody else that tries to own it is stealing from them. And therefore, you're a criminal. Can you believe they got away with that? They did, because we did nothing. We didn't realize how important plants were. At least the majority of people were afraid of the marijuanaization of the cannabis plant. That's what I call it. Because as you all might know, cannabis was involved in our wonderful United States for ever since its founding. We had hemp grown at Monticello and Mount Vernon. And then since from 1830 on to 1930, cannabis was part of our United States pharmacopoeia. It was pages and pages of indications the cannabis was coming from India, because a doctor in India wrote a paper on it, and it was revolutionized the entire field of Western medicine. We're talking 1838. So when we talk about medical marijuana today, it's not a new thing. We're basically rediscovering old things, but now we're understanding more and more about how it works. So cannabis has been here for a long time in the United States. It was just alienated from us in the early part of the 20th century. Fear campaign, marijuana is a Mexican-Spanish slang word. Maybe comes from the Portuguese word mariguango, means to intoxicate. This is what this is. This is just a bit of smoke and mirrors game, my friends. I was a HempFest attendee for many years. I've been coming since 2002. This was a place where you could actually see people smoke out legally, and or at least quasi-legally, and it was no big deal. And that's exactly the point, because you know what? This plant is naturally occurring. It's no big shock that people are going to use it, because we have receptors in our nervous system that bind to the chemicals in cannabis, cannabinoid receptors. And did you know that those cannabinoids are the most active neurotransmitters in the brain on a per-second basis? That's right. And people who know neuroscience and neurobiology, they don't even learn this stuff. And they think they're experts in neuroscience, but they don't even know the cannabinergic function of the nervous system. So, my friends, What happened to me is that it came directly in my face. I was faced with the social death threat that comes about with this carceral ecology, this massive criminalization with thousands of, hundreds of thousands of people in cages for plants and plant products. And, you know, people can say, they put their heads down, it's not my issue, it's not my friends, we're enclosed away in suburbia, we're enclosed away somewhere else, it's somebody else's problem. But you know what? When it comes into your life, into your face, then you actually start to feel that distress. You start to think, oh my God, this is a social death threat. Everything I work for can be taken away for a plant. And my friends, we all have to look out for each other, and we have to, the more that we learn about marijuana, cannabis, cannabinergic flowers, you'll realize how much of a personal issue it is to you. How many people do you know who have diabetes, who have Alzheimer's disease? How many family relatives do you think might develop that in the future? You know? I mean, how personal do you want it to get? You know, we know that cannabinoids stop the formation of the Alzheimer's disease plaque better than the leading drugs for Alzheimer's, donepezil and Tacrin, FDA-approved drugs. We know that you don't have to form that protein that's going to poke holes in your brain tissue if you have cannabinoids around. That's the National Library of Medicine, my friends. How personal do you want it to become? You know, the leading cause of blindness in this country is diabetic retinopathy. Do you know that a chemical in cannabis, cannabidiol, can slow the progression of that retinopathy? How many people do you know who have diabetes and are risking going blind and they have no knowledge of this? This is sickening. The more we learn about cannabis as a medicine, the more we realize how egregious its prohibition and how deeply destructive of human life and liberty and human rights it is. So I want you all to think about how this can affect you personally and activate yourselves. Thank you very much for coming out. Enjoy the hemp.
That was Sunil Aliwal on stage at Seattle's Hemp Fest. Coming up for you next, here's a portion of a panel that took place on the Hemposium stage. This panel includes Allison Holcomb, Joanne McKee, and Dale Rogers.
The Democratic Party hasn't done anything about it. The Republican Party's did it. We need to take back our state. We need to take back our country. This is not a place where you get warrantless wiretaps and warrantless searches and warrantless anything. This is our country, and you need to start talking to your friends. You need to start talking to people about taking back this country. If George Bush ends his office with nothing taken away from him, the next president, however kind-hearted he may be, will have a whole bunch of toys in his box that he can go ahead and use, like warrantless stuff and so on and so forth. We need to stand up as patients, make sure that the legislature knows who we are and knows what we want. Six mature plants is what they would like to talk about. I think we should be able to have two or three plants per ounce. If you don't start off to grow 24 ounces, which is what they want to give us as a monthly 60-day supply. You don't start off that. You start off just growing the plants you can possibly grow, and the ones that make it after the first two or three crops, it's shit. It's hardly worth using for medicine. But since you can get medicine out of the leaf, you use it. The patients need to stand up for their state, for their city, for their country.
Hello, I'm Allison Holcomb. I'm the director of the Marijuana Education Project at the ACLU in Washington. Like Douglas, I represented medical marijuana patients back before there was a medical marijuana law in this state. In 1996, I represented Martin Martinez, who some of you may know through his work with Lifevine. We went to a jury trial. We got to cross-examine a DEA agent about their reports on the cannabis yield of outdoor plants and how you can't use that to compare with indoor plants. Sadly, after representing Martin Martinez, more and more cases kept coming up. More and more cases keep going into the court system. One of those cases was a woman and her husband out on the peninsula. They were growing for themselves and for one other patient who was the, there was a father and a son actually in another house that were very, very ill. The WestNet team, who some of you may know, followed any sort of law enforcement activity related to medical marijuana, came in, seized all of the plants, and within a month, one of the patients that they were growing for died because he no longer had a supply of medical marijuana. It's still going on. It's still not working for everybody. There's no question about that. What's exciting, though, is that for the first time this year, our state government is going to be getting involved in medical marijuana and taking a look at it. Our legislators passed amendments to a medical marijuana bill for the first time in 10 years. Ever since the initiative passed in 1998, there's been a bill introduced every year, and it's never gotten anywhere. And the main reason why those bills don't get anywhere is because they have the word marijuana in them. This year, the legislators were brave and passed, finally, a bill that had the word marijuana in it by margins of 2-1, bipartisan support across the board. The bill did not have everything that we wanted. The bill did not have everything that was originally introduced. But the bill did do some things that corrected problems that had come up through bad court decisions. Primary caregivers, before this bill passed, primary caregivers couldn't just be people that were designated providing you medical marijuana. They actually also had to be providing you housing or food and support and other types of care. So caregivers were being denied the medical marijuana defense. That's been corrected. One of the things that has come up, obviously the biggest thing that people are here to talk about, is defining what the 60-day supply is. Those of you that know medical marijuana laws in other states know that every other state in this country that has a medical marijuana bill has some definition of what a supply is, what a quantity is. And those definitions are not good. This is a very important time. Those definitions are very limited, very restricted. In Oregon, some people have been referencing the Oregon model. That is the biggest supply guideline in the country, but it may not be enough either. And what's important is not that we fight the process, not that we don't engage with government, but that we in fact engage with them and give them the information that they need to have to make the right call about a definition, whatever that is. But we have to be practical, we have to work with them, we have to realize that they're going to be looking at other states' laws. We need to have the information available to us that says, this is what a realistic 60-day supply is. We need to be able to put that in front of these people and tell them, look, we're here to engage with you. People need to come to these hearings. I'm really sorry that there are people that are afraid, but either if you don't come to the hearing, you need to write in. You can write in with, you can write it via mail, you can fax comments in, you can email, you can have somebody come and read a letter that you've written to these hearings. There's information about all the hearings that are available at the ACLU booth, and hopefully some other folks here have printed up flyers for you to take with you that has the dates, times, and locations of these hearings. Because that, we need to move forward. Dale is absolutely right. We need to move forward. And people need to talk. Not be afraid. Don't be afraid.
Like the guy said, if we don't hang together, we will all hang separately.
We wrote this law. We wrote this law to be different from any other states. We were the second to do it, and we did differ a great deal from Oregon, and that was on purpose. And we've always made our own rules and went by our own guidelines up here.
10 years ago, when the first law was written and put together, medical marijuana was something you couldn't speak of in public without being afraid somebody might overhear you and think the wrong thing. Nowadays, people have definitions. There are laws on the books in children's welfare and so on and so forth that have been changed because of the medical marijuana law. There has never been a law on the books about medical marijuana in the state of Washington, so they don't know how to act. It's 10 years later. They know how to act. They've had enough newspaper and such. They know where we're coming from. And now we can show them exactly what we need and what we use and how we deal with our medicine.
There's no question that the information, and we've had a lot, there's been a lot of people that have gotten together and a lot of patients have gotten together and talked about what's going to be presented at the Department of Health. I think that we have a fairly effective organization of patients at this point, groups of patients that are going to be able to present information at the Department of Health, and they're going to be able to present credible information at the Department of Health. I work with doctors in litigation, and there's a paper, a dosing paper that's been written by Dr. Greg Carter and others, and Rocco is one of the authors of the papers here, and Dr. Donald Abrams and Patrick Wyatt. Did a wonderful job and wrote the only peer-reviewed, scientifically-based paper. It gives guidelines. There are other guidelines that have been out there in the law that are clearly inadequate, and I don't think are meeting patients' needs. I mean, this isn't about playing a numbers game with the fucking plants. This is not about playing a numbers game with getting marijuana to people. This is about saving people's lives. I didn't want this battle with the Department of Health, frankly, and a lot of you know that. You know there's a split in the community. You know that stuff's going on. But we're here, and we're going to have to talk to them, and we're going to have to try and convince them that, you know, six plants ain't enough, and, you know, it's not going to work. And the point, and we're going to do that. As patients, I think we can go in and we can tell people, look, what's happening here. This is what we need. This is how growing marijuana really works. This is how hard it is. This is how difficult it is to do indoors. This is how the process works. This is the reality of it. You know, it's not a certainty. Stop being stingy. We're trying to save people's lives here. What is the point in arguing about plants? We need to go into the Department of Health and tell them, yeah, you want to solve things for us? Okay, great. Here's what we do. Here's how we do it. Let's conform the damn law to the currently working reality of the patient's lives.
Keith's drop also took place in one of the panels at the Hemposium tent that day. Here's an answer Keith gave to one of the questions asked by the audience.
Obviously, I think all of us would want to have elections that have integrity. I guess the question is that too big a reform for us to take on? I mean, frankly, I think we got to keep our eye on the ball, which is we want to stop arresting marijuana smokers. You know, there were 786,000 of us arrested last year. So I think we can do that even without cleaning up the political system entirely. I'd love to see it cleaned up. But even before that, if we exercise our political muscle, we can stop the arrest of smokers because there are more of us than them. But we have to be disciplined, and we have to be willing to never vote for a candidate that wants to treat us like a criminal. That's the answer, I think.
Keith Strupp on stage there at the Hemposium at Seattle's Hempfest in 2007. We're going to have a lot more audio from Seattle's Hempfest this year right here on your first source for marijuana news, information, and entertainment, Normal's Daily Audio Stash. Make sure to get your audio stash every day. Listening to Normal's Daily Audio Stash, the growing truth about cannabis. Make sure you visit our website at normalaudiostash.com. That's normalaudiostash.com for more information about every day's show. I'm your host, Chris Goldstein. Thanks for listening today. See you at 4:20 tomorrow. Podcasting technology of Normal is made possible by Red Aphid Interactive Media. More information at redaphid.com.